Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we tend to cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. We try to seek the truth together. And thank you guys for joining us live. I see someone in the chat, Graffiti Forensics, says, because people complain, like, they're like, why is the intro so long? But we start at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So if the intro is long, it's because you're here early and hanging out. As Graffiti,
which you're welcome to do.
As Graffiti Forensic writes in our chat, he says, or she says, if you experience distress over the long intro, it may be best that you finally choose to log in and watch at 4 p.m. instead of coming early just to complain. That was my favorite comment of the day. So thank you, Graffiti Forensics, for your wit and sarcasm to start off our show. Hey, we've got a busy show for you on this Monday because a lot happened over this weekend and is developing as we speak. There are a number of instances in Washington of neocons, Democrats, and the war machine pushing for this forever war in Ukraine. The more money, $100 billion in additional funding being lined up to be sent to Ukraine right now, and what they're calling a frozen conflict, which would be just a perpetual state of war. But that is probably not going to happen. Scott Ritter is going to be joining us in just moments to talk about whether or not this war is over, or whether we are in a forever war.
And then there are Nazi sympathizers, and there are Nazi sympathizers. Canada, that includes you now. Your parliament has voted you in to sympathize with Nazis. We're going to bring you an update on this story in which all of Canadian parliament gave a standing ovation to a literal Nazi. And we're going to talk to you about how it's not a joke. And there is actually a movement in Ukraine to be a Nazi sympathizer and Holocaust denier. We're going to talk about that because it exists. And if we don't, we might be heading for another one. Plus, remember that pandemic treaty that we've been telling you about that's going to hand power to the World Health Organization away from your country's government? Well, that was moved forward last week at the United Nations, and we're going to bring you an update on that. You need to be reminded on that if you don't want it, because I don't remember voting to be a part of the United World Government.
And ceding individual liberties and national sovereignty to an unelected group of globalists. And by the way, this was happening in the United Nations when everyone was focusing on Zelensky. So they kind of quietly maybe snuck this through. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome, everybody. Good to see everybody. James Hatfield says, Redacted complaints about censorship, and you're censoring me now. Well, James, we're not censoring you because I'm reading your comment live right here on the show. We don't censor you. By the way, YouTube censors comments, and so there you go, James. We're not censoring you. And it's complains, not complaints. Just want to make sure that you get that spelling correct.
All right. Enough it's picking like fights with chat.
That's what I was going to say. We don't censor, but we will correct.
That's right. That's right.
We will do that. All right. Well, thank you for joining the show where we are peace advocates. We try and see through propaganda that leads the world into war. and authoritarian regimes and autocratic regimes and all of those things. We are here to just provide historical context to the news, questions, uncomfortable conversations. That's what you come here for. So you also can get that from our newsletter that comes out Monday through Thursday, every day that this show comes out. It is a totally free subscription. All you have to do is go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and then you'll get an email that looks like this. And you click here that, yes, you agree to us sending you this newsletter. We work really hard on this. It involves a lot of the stories that we talk about here every single show and more. We try and make it fun and light, a little bit of levity, because we know the news has anything but. So, yeah. It's fun. Some talking pieces, things you might like, things you won't like, plus links to original sources when we talk about stories here so you can do your own studying, think for yourself. Yes, so once again, please do join our newsletter and our community over at redacted.inc. One more time, that's our free newsletter, redacted.inc.
Well, is the war officially over, or are we about to have a forever war in Ukraine? A new piece by journalist Seymour Hersh is out revealing that the war is over, and Washington basically knows it. They're admitting it now to Seymour Hersh. Quoting his piece, he says, "The reality is that Vladimir Zelensky's battered army no longer has any chance of a victory." And he says those in Washington admit that the war is essentially over. And yet The Economist magazine out with a brand new full cover story called "Time for a Rethink," basically calling for a forever war in Ukraine, a permanent war in Ukraine. Senator Josh Hawley admitted in a meeting with Zelensky this week that the Biden administration is basically asking for a forever war, a permanent stalemate.
How was the meeting with Zelensky, and did it change your mind at all?
Well, no. I mean, what the meeting revealed to me is that, in the words of President Zelensky, the conflict is a total stalemate. That's what he said. Totally frozen, I believe, was what his words were. Which is also what the administration told us yesterday. The administration told us yesterday they want to spend $100 billion more, our money, more, over the next year in the hopes that it will remain a stalemate. Which leads me to ask, what is the goal here?
So why does the warmonger neocons, I mean, they seem to be pushing it in this direction. Let's bring in former UN weapons inspector Scott Ritter to analyze where we are in this war. Scott, good to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Good to see you. Thank you very much for having me.
So are we about to be in a forever war? Is that the goal here for these neocons and Democrats? I mean, let's put them all together. I mean, all of these corrupt people, they're all in it together, wanting to funnel $100 billion more into this machine. Or are we done? Are we going to walk away from this and say, wow, that was a huge mistake. Let's move on.
Neither. Let's just be dead straight up honest here. The Americans have no credibility. The Europeans have no credibility. The Ukrainians have no credibility. The only side that has credibility is Russia. Stop listening to anything. Look, I love Seymour Hersh. He's a close friend. We've been friends for 25 years. The source he's quoting, I can't say what I want to think, say about the source on your show, because I would have to use some very foul language. Everybody's jumping on him saying, the words, it's over, the army's destroyed. But look how he prefaces it. Putin was an idiot to go in. Putin did. So what he's saying is the source doesn't know anything about Russia. The source is as ignorant about Russia and about what's going on today as anybody else, that this is political spin. It's not an intelligence source by somebody who knows what's going on. It's an assessment by somebody who is changing their position because they bought into the nonsense early on that Putin's a thug, he was an idiot to invade, etc. That means you don't understand anything about the special military operation. And if you think this is going to be a frozen conflict, understand this. In order to be frozen, both sides have to agree to freeze. You know who's not going to freeze? Russia. Russia is winning this war. Russia will win this war. And this war will be won on the battlefield by terms set by Russia. I didn't just make that up. Sergei Lavrov basically threw those words back in the face of the Europeans. Because you remember back when they were cocky, back when they said, oh, we've got this stuff, Zelensky's going to launch a counteroffensive. They were saying, no negotiations. We're going to win this on the battlefield. And now everybody's saying, freeze it, have negotiations. The Russians are saying, no, no, we sort of agree with you last time. It's going to be one on the battlefield. And that's the way it's going to be. $100 billion more to freeze a conflict. Let's just make this clear. The conflict will not be frozen. That $100 billion, if it's expended, will be wasted because the Russians will chew through it like a hot knife through butter, just like they chewed through the $113 billion we've already poured into Ukraine. Is this war over? I mean, it's over as if, you know, like the Second World War was, you know, the war on the Eastern Front was over after Battle of Kursk. Everybody knows who's going to win this war. There's no one out there who can say, you know, oh, Ukraine can turn this around. What they want is a frozen war. Why? Well, look at Lindsey Graham. It's the best investment we ever made, he said. We're spending all this money, only 5% of a defense budget, and we're killing Russians without any American boots on the ground, without any American body bags coming home. That's the kind of stuff that should put you in the docket in a court of law, found you guilty of conspiracy for mass murder and genocide, and hung by the neck until dead. I mean, Lindsey Graham should be kicked out of the Senate, and anybody who thinks like him should be kicked out of the Congress, because it's just stupid. The Russians had every right to initiate this action. The United States, NATO doubled down on stupid. The initial stupid was expanding NATO up to the Russian border, knowing that it would trigger a Russian military response. Having triggered the military response, we then opted to continue the fight, even though the Russians were working to get a negotiated termination of this conflict. I just need to remind your audience, had Zelensky signed the peace agreement that the Russians had on the table that would have ended this conflict on 1 April 2022, Zaporizhia would be Ukrainian. Kherson would be Ukrainian. The Donbass would probably be going through an internationally monitored referendum right now to determine what its future would be. 400,000 Ukrainian men would be alive. 20 million Ukrainian civilians would not have been kicked out of their home. An entire generation of Ukrainian children wouldn't be displaced without fathers, without education, condemned to a future of despair because of that decision. That decision was a decision backed by the United States, promulgated by the United States, by the same people articulating in favor of a frozen conflict today. There will be no frozen conflict. Russia will not allow it to happen. Russia will continue to be in the business of demilitarizing the Ukrainian army. That means killing them. Let's just be frank what it means. They're going to slaughter them. They're going to wade into them. They're going to knock them down like wheat being knocked down by a scythe. This is going to get ugly. But the outcome is absolutely 100% guaranteed. Total Russian victory.
And yet neocons in Washington are pushing for this idea of perhaps a frozen conflict. The idea we can fight them over there. We'll fight Russia over there so we don't have to use American men to do it. And we'll use Ukrainian men to do it. Bill Kristol over the weekend. I mean, this guy, you know, went from being somewhat rational, becoming a total warmonger. And pushing for this idea of a protracted war. He tweeted out this video that's now gone viral. Last night it launched on television networks across the United States. It's a Republican advertisement. I'm just going to play it here and get our audience's response to it because it's just stunning. Watch.
When America arms Ukraine, we get a lot for a little. Putin is an enemy of America. We've used 5% of our defense budget to arm Ukraine, and with it, they've destroyed 50% of Putin's army. We've done all this by sending weapons from storage, not our troops. The more Ukraine weakens Russia, the more it also weakens Russia's closest ally, China. America needs to stand strong against our enemies. That's why Republicans in Congress must continue to support Ukraine.
So Anders Aslan then tweeted after this video was made public last night, said this is short but perfect, this video. By the U.S. giving Ukraine 5% of the U.S. military budget, the justification for us using this money, Ukraine destroyed 50% of the Russian military, he says. This is the most efficient use of military expenditures ever, and this is how they're justifying it. First of all, they've destroyed 50% of Russia's military?
I don't know. Look, Anders Aslan is a Swedish apologist who worked for the Atlantic Council. His sole function, his DNA has been genetically altered so that all he does is spew anti-Russian nonsense. He's lost all credibility as an objective observer of the issues. And this endorsement of this ridiculous Republican video. Look, this war will end. Russia will win. That video will always be here to remind the American people of just how morally corrupt and bankrupt the Republican Party is and Anders Osland is. 50% of the Russian army, are they high? The Russian army has probably suffered about 50,000 dead. Maybe you could add a few thousand more. Maybe you could subtract a few thousand more. That's a lot of dead. Remember, it took us about 10 years in Vietnam to lose that many dead, and it's 600 days. 50,000 is a huge amount. It is painful for Russia, but it ain't 50% of the Russian military. The Russian military was 900,000 strong when this war began. They're going to pump up the active military to 1.5 million. They're in the process of doing that right now. In addition to that is the 300,000 mobilized reservists, 300,000 volunteers, and another 250,000 recently conscripted, turned into contract soldiers, in addition to the 200,000 they had. I mean, I'm not the greatest mathematician in the world, but I think I just articulated a case of well over a million people being dedicated to this special military operation, and they lost 50,000. Maybe Swedish math is different, but it's just stupidity beyond belief. But you know who has lost more than 50% of their military? The Ukrainians. They started this conflict with about 246,000 active duty forces, another 300,000 territorialists. Maybe you could throw in another 200,000 border guards and internal troops. 400,000 dead, which means that probably another over a million wounded. Okay, they're the ones that have had their military gutted. I don't know. I mean, we live in this strange world where you remember Seinfeld, the comedy show? They had the episode where everything was the opposite.
Bizarro world. Yeah.
Well, this is Bizarro world. This is where, you know, the Republicans, Aslund, Ukraine, the Western media seems to be projecting onto Russia everything that's happening to the Ukrainians. Because the truth about the Russians is that, yeah, I mean, every military makes mistakes. But what happened at the beginning of this conflict was not a mistake. The conflict was waged not to conquer Kiev, not to conquer Ukraine, but to get the Ukrainians to the negotiating table, something Russia had been striving to do before the conflict. So even when the conflict began, Russia was saying, all we want to do is pressure you to get to the negotiating table. And they did. So the Russians won phase one of the operation. That's what people don't understand. It wasn't a Russian defeat. They got the Ukrainians to the negotiating table. They got them to initial a peace plan. And had NATO not intervened, there would have been peace. So how can anybody sit there and say the Russians have failed, they're weak, et cetera? Then Russia had to adapt, and they've adapted today. Today, the reason why that $113 billion didn't succeed in turning the tide is that the Russians are better than the Ukrainians. The Russians are better than NATO. Russia's winning this war, and NATO can't admit it. And so we're going to spend another $100 billion. But the good news on this one, Clayton, is we won't be given the chance to spend $100 billion. Because to spend $100 billion, there has to be a Ukrainian state capable of receiving $100 billion. And I don't think that Ukraine's going to be around much longer. I think Zelensky's on his final legs. His wife just gave an interview today where she said, I don't know if he and the Ukrainian people are going to be seeing eye to eye much longer.
That's why you cancel elections.
That's why he canceled elections, and because he knows what the truth is. But the Ukrainian military, too, you're starting to get mainstream media coming out and just saying there's literally nothing left. They've burned through everything. There's nothing left. Whereas the Russians still have 300,000 uncommitted reserves, trained, organized, ready to rock. There's still some heavy fighting left. There's still going to be a lot of people dying, but the outcome is absolutely guaranteed. Total Russian victory.
Well, that's what I wanted to get you out of here on, which is what Zelensky said the other day, which is he wants to continue this failed counteroffensive through the winter. No plans to stop. So where do you see this going over the next 3 months as we head into, we head into wintertime and snowy conditions? What happens?
Well, you know, I'd like to get in my car and drive to California right now. We're getting sort of cold weather here. I'd like to go to the beach and get a suntan. But my tank only holds so much gas. And as I go across the country, unless I can refill my gas tank, I'm going to run out of gas, and it doesn't matter what I want. The tank that Zelensky has is fueled by men. And he's run out of men. The tank's empty. And unless there's a magic Ukrainian manpower gas station out there where he can refill the gas tank, his vehicle's stuck in the middle of the country. And that's the reality. There aren't enough men in Ukraine capable of sustaining this counteroffensive. To be honest, there's not enough men in Ukraine capable of maintaining a viable defense along the entire line of contact. The Russians are going to start the process of just grinding them down again. And when there's not anybody to replace what they have ground down, the Russians will break through. And that's how this war ends.
I guess I'll get you out of here on this. I said I was already going to get you out of here on something else. But this week we saw this attack on the fleet, the naval fleet, of course, in Sevastopol. I think the Western media thought, oh, Putin's going to respond devastatingly. And perhaps NATO was hoping that Putin would respond devastatingly, do something stupid. What do you think the response is going to be, or will there be any response at all that we would classify as massive on some sort of a television scale that CNN would cover and say, see, we told you?
Well, first of all, let's just start this. Putin doesn't give a damn about CNN. He doesn't give a damn about you. He doesn't give a damn about me. He doesn't give a damn about anybody in the West, what we care, what we want to see, what our expectations are, etc. He's here to win the conflict on terms that are favorable to Russia. What's the one thing Ukraine desperately needs right now? Because we just talked about it. They're out of men. Their counteroffensive is stalled. They got nothing. They need help. Help in the form of military intervention. They need NATO to commit to this fight. What could trigger that? An overreaction by Russia. Russia doing something precipitous. Russia doing something that changes the algorithm of the war. Putin knows this. He's the smartest guy in the room right now. So, yeah, the Ukrainians launched an attack. It's a provocative attack. It used scalp missiles. It used Storm Shadows. Those are the French and British air-launched cruise missiles. Several broke through. I mean, when you have the NATO intelligence telling you what the radar coverage is, telling you where the what the range models are, where the gaps in the radar cover is, you can program these missiles to go through. And some got through, and they hit a building that, frankly speaking, was virtually empty, because in a wartime you don't hang out in your normal office. You're down in a war bunker. So they killed, I think, one serviceman on duty, or he's missing. I don't know if they found the body yet, but it's embarrassing. Let's be straight up honest. It's embarrassing for the Russians, but they're not going to overreact. At the appropriate time, you will see the Russians take out a decision-making center. Now, they're not going to do it in a way, I don't believe they're going to do it in a way that's designed to generate the ideal CNN image. They're going to do it in a time when it brings about the maximum harm to the Ukrainians. They're going to wait until people are together, they've located them, and then they're going to hit them and they're going to kill them all. And then the Russians won't say anything about it. They'll just, it'll be done. Russia's not playing to the West. That's why the West doesn't understand what Russia's doing, because, we're used to, drama. We're used to people projecting something. It's like a Hollywood movie. We have a trailer. I mean, why did Zeluzhny in December give an interview to The Economist saying straight up how many forces he needed? So the Russians went, that's about 9 to 12 brigades. Thank you very much, Zeluzhny. And we're going to go to Melitopol. That means you have to go through Robotino, Tokmak. So and then the Russians went, well, thank you. Now we know exactly what your force structure is, and we know exactly what your axis of advance is. So we're going to build the world's strongest defenses between point A and point B, which they did. They brought in the master of defense, Lieutenant General Alexander Romanchuk, the man who wrote Russian defense doctrine. He built these defenses, and the Ukrainians can't even dent it. See, that's stupidity in the extreme. There was no element of surprise. The Russians knew exactly who was going to attack, where they're going to attack, when they attack, and what their objective was, and they destroyed them, because that's how the West has done this, like a Hollywood movie. We have to play to an audience, because the outcome is not what the trailer suggests. And so we have to keep people involved. The Russians, on the other hand, they don't do Hollywood. They'll make their movies after the fact. There'll be soul-searching movies, movies that talk about the horror and trauma of a war, but the Russians aren't going to sit there and project what they're doing. They're simply going to win this war, and they're going to win this war in a way that is totally, you know, dismissive of the West's need for drama, for, you know, Hollywood-style propaganda. And it's frustrating for people in the West because, you know, we're getting fed all this nonsense from, you know, NATO, from the United States, from the Ukrainians, and we look at the Russians and we're getting nothing. And so the tendency is to fall in on the data you have, but it's totally misleading. And as I said, if I were the Russians, I'd probably be chuckling, because just imagine, you and I are having this great conversation this morning about things that from the Russian perspective just don't matter. They don't care about a GOP video. They don't care about Josh Hawley. They don't care about Zelensky. They don't care about any of it because it no longer matters. The war will be decided on the battlefield. Sergei Lavrov has said this. Putin agrees with him. And that is that. And the West can't handle it. We're talking about a frozen conflict. There will be no frozen conflict. There will be total, unconditional surrender by the Ukrainians to the Russians at a time and choosing of the Russians.
Scott Ritter, it's always great to see you. Thank you so much for your analysis. Breaking all of these important pieces down for us. We always appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to all of you, by the way, watching us live tonight. If you would be so kind, because YouTube has been suppressing us and this content, if you would actually hit that like button while we're live, it actually pushes us further out into the algorithm. There's a war on right now for information. And you're seeing this across, I mean, all of these social media platforms mostly. Maybe, and there's some question about what's going on with some Twitter stuff as well, formerly Twitter, but definitely on YouTube. So if you guys hit that like button and subscribe to the channel, it definitely really, you know, helps us here as we're live Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. But, you know, the West absolutely is calling for that. I mean, the West is absolutely calling for, you know, some sort of big Putin response to these provocations so that NATO can step in fully and take this thing over. And you saw that in Washington this week. I mean, calling for another $100 billion in funds for this? For what?
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, the 60 Minutes piece last night. How many of you guys saw that unbelievable story last night? So we can't show any 60 Minutes clips here on the show because they will copyright strike us. So we can't do it. But we can tell you that they did a whole piece last night on how the United States government is funding Ukraine's, not only their military and their weapons, but all of their first responders, 57,000 of their first responders are subsidized by you, the American taxpayer.
That includes training dogs for first response. That includes pensions for people who are retiring as first responders. It's pretty extensive.
And farmers. But,
yeah.
And
yeah, seed. Oh, seeds. They're also, yeah, seed research.
Go ahead. Pensions of their who are the people in charge, the pensions of the,
yes,
the government.
Yeah. Now, the way that 60 Minutes presented this was that that's a good thing. Aren't we so generous? Isn't that amazing that we're doing that? Without presenting you the context with which it could be said that we wouldn't have to do that if we hadn't led them into war and empowered the bad guys.
No, the context was Putin's a madman. So therefore, the United States taxpayers have to fund first responders to look through the rubble and find bodies. Like, that's basically right. How they positioned it.
With zero historical context about this conflict, other than, you know, Putin was feeling personally threatened by the expansion of NATO, which I spent the weekend reading another of Jacques Baud's book. He's the former NATO specialist from Switzerland, who continues to give us this context of how NATO has led this war from by the nose. And he talks about how even Mexican President Lopez Obrador had said, we give the money, they give the bodies in Ukraine, and talks about how the West completely ignores and oversimplifies this with this line that Putin was just threatened by NATO or hates democracy or didn't want, Westerners at their doorstep. And it's a gross oversimplification. And so you should not repeat those things if you are not studied But again, the media is leading us into thinking that this is wonderful, that we're supporting this, and we are so generous.
Well, let's ask this question, David, Philip, you guys, like Tangerine Sky in our chat room asks, so why do the, why do the American people tolerate this BS? It's a great question. Is it because of the propaganda? Like they don't know better and they're being...
Yes. I mean, it felt very uncomfortable when we started to look into this show to say like, Putin is not the madman. There was actually a reason that this happened, that the people in this area were being attacked and asked for protection. And that felt wrong because there is a mainstream media narrative.
From day one, when we were talking about the Donbass, David, you remember, and Philip, we were talking about what was happening since 2014. I mean, we got banned and blocked. And, you know, now it seems like there's an awareness in the mainstream media like, oh, okay, that was true. And then you had the head of NATO last week admitting that the expansion of NATO is the reason that Putin invaded, which had been totally kept under the... They were not admitting that. They finally admitted it last week.
Yeah.
This unprovoked war was not so unprovoked. David, go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I was just talking about this the other day, how it's like people just really don't want to step outside of their comfort zone, their media channels, to get a history lesson because... Like our audience understands and gets the history lessons. They go back, they look at the facts of the matter, they look at what's actually been going on. Whereas some people are just so comfortable, they don't do that and they just follow the mainstream narrative. So they think that, you know, they're helping by putting the Ukraine flag on. They think they're helping by sending them all these weapons and money. I was talking to a guy on X the other day. He's like, hey, we're only doing that and they're only loans. We're going to get it all back. I'm like, no, we won't. Like you sometimes have to step outside of your comfort zone and look back into history to see what has actually happened, because there are facts there that they do not tell you on the mainstream media. And we talked about those facts.
Yeah, you don't have to go that far. And in fact, you know, I see people that I once worked with and friends who post things about Zelensky and how they're excited about Zelensky's presence in certain areas. And I think to myself, do you know that he is the personification of weapons of mass destruction? He is what weapons of mass destruction would be if it were a walking, talking person. He is perpetuating a lie about a war and dragging innocent men to their deaths. And I don't understand if people just don't know that and they just are very comfortable with this. Putin is crazy. Russia's so far away. It's not a threat to me, but I can say this and it makes me feel heroic in order to support Ukraine with a flag and a picture. I don't understand what people are doing when they post these nice things about Ukraine. Like, what do they believe that then... I don't know. I really do want to know. Like, is it that you believe that Zelensky is a hero?
Yeah, it's a good question. Saul in our chat here says, Saul to Paul says, redacted is so pro-Russian. Wrong. I think we've been very clear on that. We're pro-human beings. And if you pay attention to what we say, we are very much anti-NATO on this show. And Ukrainian men are being killed because of NATO. And so if we can dispel this, you know, Ukraine versus Russia thing for a moment here.
It's more nuanced than that. Zelensky, knowing that the EU and NATO was not going to let his country in without a full-scale war, ordered an attack on the Donbas and Crimea in late 2021 and early 2022. The people of those areas asked Russia to intervene to protect them from this pending attack, which was an escalation of what was already an attack for 10 years. And Putin had said, he said publicly, we're not interested in expanding our borders. We're not interested in expanding beyond Crimea. We don't think we're going to need to go in there. But as that attack became more imminent, the Russian parliament voted to go in and protect those people because the Minsk agreements were no longer being ignored and because there is international law to protect your people who live outside your borders. And so had Russia not done that, those people were going to be attacked and have continued to be attacked. So we don't have to say we are pro-Russia or we want Russia to have more land. We absolutely did not want civilians to continue to suffer. We absolutely do want those people to remain safer. And if it means that the Russian border has expanded, then that's what that has to mean. I don't live there. I didn't get a vote, right? But I absolutely don't want more innocent lives thrown at that line and that line to disappear so that those civilians can continue to be attacked. Now, the question remains, is there anything left of the Ukrainian army to continue to attack those people anymore? No. There might not be, right? But they voted. That's where it lands. It's not for us who don't live there to say. And so don't say we're pro-Russia because we understand the context. NATO knows that Zelensky was preparing to attack those places. So when you put Zelensky on your social media, you are saying you are okay with attacks on civilians. And so if that makes us pro-Russia, I've never been to Russia, I don't speak Russian, then I'm sorry that you have a problem boiling down things into black and white when the world is gray.
Well, and, yes, well said.
And
well
also,
said.
If you're okay with Zelensky, you're okay with him eliminating other parties. You're okay with him eliminating media that's pro or anti-Ukraine or whatever, or doesn't go against the narrative. Like, he is a dictator. Like, the things that he's doing
canceled
are like
elections.
What dictators do. Yeah, yes. Canceled elections.
Shut down shut down opposition media and opposition
churches.
We haven't said
the United States hasn't said anything about canceling elections. I mean, it's literally not even a question asked during the White House press briefings. Not even a question. We're so pro-democracy, Kamala Harris. That's what you told us we were fighting this war. And yet, when you cancel elections, what do you have to say about it? Jay Vicks in our chat here says, I like what Jay Vicks says. He says, I'm a Canadian with a Ukrainian background. I was completely on your side until I tuned into your show. It was bewildering at first because of propaganda, but sticking it out was liberating. I think maybe what you're meaning to say, Jay, is that
he was like, because
of the propaganda.
Putin
of,
is a madman. You guys have it wrong.
Oh,
that
yeah,
kind of
you
thing.
Thought, okay. And now, yeah. Jay, that's a pretty amazing admission. I separately spoke to a Ukrainian today who said he's absolutely disgusted with the propaganda and what has happened with his country. And most people just don't know it because the propaganda machine is so strong. It's, you know, it's terrifyingly strong. So,
yeah, I won't be accused of being for any one side. I'm a reader. We look into context.
Yeah.
I can't take that. That I cannot abide that shit.
Yeah. Like,
I want to agree with chat, Natalie, that they said it was very well put. The way you put that was very well done. I agree.
Yeah. The only thing missing was at the end, you should have dropped your mic.
Just it's on a swivel. It's on a thing. I can't.
Just don't drop any microphones. These are expensive microphones.
Okay.
Don't drop any microphones. All right. We've got more news to get to here on your Monday, if you can believe that. We're going to go to Canada because the outrage over this weekend and what happened in the Canadian Parliament is reverberating at this hour. Justin Trudeau, just a few minutes ago, coming out and saying, hey, what happened in Canada's Parliament this weekend over the past few days with an actual Nazi in Parliament, that was Russian propaganda. Trudeau just said that just a few minutes ago. Like, you can't even make this stuff up. So we're going to comment on that and talk about what's going on in Canada.
Especially after saying that the trucker convoys were Nazis.
And white supremacists.
But they want an actual Nazi. Right.
Oh, we don't know.
What is happening in this clown world? Anyway, we're going to get to that in a moment. But first,
we want to tell you about our show sponsor over at Aura. Because have you ever Googled yourself and were you shocked to see your personal information exposed or on one of those public listing sites? Or have you ever Googled for personal information of someone you know, and then you're shocked that you can actually find their name, their email, their phone number, or see these pop up on search sites? Well, obviously, if you do that and you find your personal information, that can feel just a little bit vulnerable. Don't do that if you don't already believe me. Only do that if you don't believe me, because it's an anxietizing thing to do. Because, of course, there are these websites that buy and sell personal information. That's why our show sponsor at Aura helps you to make sure that you are in control of your personal data. Aura does so much more to protect you and your family from online threats that you can't see. It's really easy to set up. You don't have to download several different apps to get things like parental controls, antivirus, VPN, password management, identity theft insurance, and more. You get everything at one affordable price just to make you that much safer on the internet, which is at a premium. Just today, I found a government contract that showed that The government wants to search your personal information, monitor your social media. You just can never be too careful on the internet. You know, stop data brokers from exposing your information. So go to our sponsor. You can go to aura.com/redacted. That's aura.com/redacted. And get a 14-day free trial to see if any of your personal information has been compromised. And then they walk you through what to do with it. They don't just say, oh, yeah, you're exposed. They will help you fix it, help you get more safe online. So once again, that's aura.com/redacted. Check them out for your free 14-day trial, aura.com/redacted.
Well, the Canadian Parliament did the unthinkable at an event honoring Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, where they're going to shovel a whole bunch more money in his direction. He was on his world tour asking for more money in the United States and then Canada and other spots. So this is what the Canadian Parliament did. They brought in a 98-year-old former Waffen-SS soldier. Yes, you don't get more Nazi than that, actually. The Waffen-SS, of course, were the worst of the worst, carrying out the most vile of killings at concentration camps. But this particular Waffen-SS unit that this guy served in was responsible for burning alive thousands of Poles. So I wonder how the Polish feel about this little celebration over the weekend. During the Nuremberg trials, of course, the Waffen-SS were labeled war criminals, a criminal organization. So what did Canada do? They gave him a standing ovation. Watch.
Zelensky's speech received at least a dozen standing ovations. There was also one for this man, a 98-year-old Ukrainian-Canadian who fought for Ukrainian independence against the Russians during the Second World War.
Journalist David Craden, who writes The Postmillennial, as the Cradens write on YouTube, is in Canada and joins us now. David, I mean, I don't even know what to say about this. You watch this unfold. What in the world was the Canadian Parliament thinking? No one vets this guy. Let's put a Nazi up in front and give him a standing ovation. And it wasn't like unintentional. It was literally reading out his resume and asking people to basically get up and give this big round of applause.
Well, Clayton, this is a very sad day for Canada and for veterans, real veterans of Canada. As everybody knows, and I know you are very well versed in the Second World War, Canada was one of three nations on D-Day that stormed the beaches of Normandy to fight Nazism. Canada punched above its weight during the Second World War, and our veterans can attest to that. This was so unbelievable to bring a former Waffen-SS soldier into Parliament to stand and receive a standing ovation from every member of Parliament. Every member of Parliament stood up and applauded this man. It was so unbelievable. When I first heard the story being talked about on social media early Sunday morning, I said, it can't be true. I said, I can't run with this story because I don't want to slander anybody. And I even Justin Trudeau, I don't think he's capable of this. But yes, he was. Now, the Speaker of the House, Anthony Rota, who is the Member of Parliament for North Bay, from which this former Waffen-SS soldier, Yaroslav Hunka, is from, he is claiming today that it was all his idea. I have trouble believing that, because the Speaker in Canada's House of Commons does not have the power that the United States Speaker of the House possesses. It's a very different position. The Speaker in Canada does not control the legislative agenda and would not be inviting someone like this to an event that is all about Justin Trudeau and Volodymyr Zelensky without getting Trudeau's approval. So I don't believe the Speaker did this all by himself. And I think this is an outrage. I think the Speaker should resign. Not only because he made this very poor decision, but because he seems to be so ignorant about history that he thinks someone who fought the Russians in the Second World War was fighting on Canada's side.
Right. Well, it's outrageous on so many levels. I want to kind of get into the legal side of it in a second if we can. But, you know, in the United States, in April of 2018 specifically, 50 U.S. lawmakers petitioned the United States State Department to urge the Ukrainian and Polish governments to take action against, quote, a rise in glorification of Holocaust-era officials across Europe, including in Hungary, Slovakia, Romania, and Baltic states. This is a worrying trend, they wrote, that must elicit a firm response from our government. This is literally Ro Khanna's website, Congressman, in 2018. Here's his website, where he says, please stop honoring people who were responsible for the Holocaust. I mean, so the U.S. has been fully aware of this for years, hunting down literal Nazis, even in their 90s, and bringing them to justice. How are these people, I know there was like 200 or 2,000 Waffen-SS who were brought into Canada, almost like, I don't know, given amnesty or protection or whatever. How are they not being prosecuted, rounded up? I mean, here's a guy getting an applause, a standing ovation. Where is the police coming in and actually, now we've got the guy, let's arrest the guy. You know how many people he's responsible for killing?
Well, I can't speculate on whether or not he's going to be arrested for war crimes. But I can tell you that why hasn't the Canadian government done anything about this? Because they were complicit in bringing in Nazis to Canada. And I compared this in my post-millennial article yesterday to Operation Paperclip in the United States, where the United States government knowingly brought Nazi rocket scientists and other high-level scientists into the United States, gave them amnesty, basically made their past disappear. They became U.S. citizens, and many of them part of the NASA space program. It's very similar. So are there embarrassments here? You might recall a decade or two ago, another Ukrainian-Canadian was discovered. He was called Ivan the Terrible. He was a concentration camp guard. This guy had been living in Canada for decades. Suddenly they found him. How many more people are out there? I'm sure many of them are dead now. I mean, Mr. Hunka is 98 years old. There's very few people who live to be that age. But the real legacy here for me is that once again, we're seeing that morality means nothing in power politics. And Canada obviously made a grave mistake here. But not only that, this is not the first time the Trudeau government has been wrapped up in Ukraine's pro-Nazi activities. Our finance minister, who's also the deputy PM, Chrystia Freeland, was walking around with a scarf depicting the neo-Nazi colors that the Azov regiment in Ukraine, which is supposedly fighting hard against the Russians right now, has adopted. It's a neo-Nazi regiment. They make no bones about it. And yet Canada has said nothing. And for that matter, Joe Biden has said nothing about this Azov regiment and its links to the Waffen-SS and to neo-Nazism.
No, they'll totally whitewash this and push this under the rug. In fact, as journalist Jacques Baud writes in his newest book, that I encourage everyone to pick up on Ukraine specifically, he says that Ukraine has a big Holocaust denial problem. And it's really rooted in the rise of the Azov Battalion following the U.S.-led Maidan coup in 2014. So it's intentional, like the intentional denying of what happened in World War II, this sort of covering up of this. It's strange. It really is absolutely strange. And then you have Trudeau at this weird, really weird speech, getting this like fake impassioned. I felt like he was like an actor. I just want to play this soundbite for our audience and get your take on this. It just felt like he was like doing something for Hollywood. And by the way, notice the fly that's on his forehead the entire time. I don't know how anyone can give a speech like that with a fly stuck on your forehead, but watch this.
Canadians know this is a question of right or wrong. Canadians know that, yes, it is incredibly hard for Ukraine to continue to stand against a Russian aggression. And let's be honest, it's hard for the democracies around the world who are there to support their citizens, who are investing for the future, who are challenged with a challenging economy around the world to continue to step up as Canada has with close to $9 billion in aid for Ukraine. But we will, because the cost on Canadians, on our lives, on our world will be so much greater if Putin wins this war that we will and have to stand every single day until Ukraine wins this war.
So, yeah, we need to double down. Putin must lose. That's the only way for democracy to survive. And we need to send billions more. So how much more is Canada going to send?
Well, Trudeau promised another $260 million and another 8 armored personnel carriers to replace the ones Ukraine has lost to the Russians. They've also lost just about all of our Leopard tanks because Trudeau has given those away. At the same time, he is once again starving our own military of funding and saying he's never going to reach that magical 2% of the GDP that he's promised NATO over the years. But I just wanted to make one point that really hit me hard yesterday, because I'm always reading about high school students in Canada and the United States who think Canada and its allies, including the United States and Great Britain, fought with the Germans. Well, obviously, they can't be faulted too much. If the Speaker of the House of Commons seems to think that we were fighting the Russians during the Second World War, his history is so bad, or he's so imbecilic, there's a huge problem here. This man should not be Speaker of the House if he doesn't even know vital Canadian history. I think it's very important to know that our allies in the Second World War were the Russians. We were not fighting with the Germans, God forbid. We were fighting to save civilization against the Nazis. And some people today in a high level of government like this don't even seem to know that. That's pathetic. Absolutely pathetic.
It's pathetic, but it's intentional, right? It's the intentional obfuscation of this information so that people aren't made aware of it, so we can continue to funnel tens of billions of dollars into Ukraine. I mean, heck, the only mainstream journalist that I can remember that asked a tough question of Zelensky on television was Brett Baer at Fox News on a Sunday show, and he asked him specifically about the Azov battalion. Now, when Fox later then published it on their website, later it was removed, they edited that part out. So this, of course, there's an intentional cover-up of what is actually going on there on the part of the deep state and the military-industrial complex that we can't, that's a bridge too far. We can't admit publicly that we're sending money into support Nazism, but that's exactly what's happening.
It harkens back to 1984, the novel to me, where Oceania was always at war with the opponent they were fighting at that time. And it's like we're being told that today. We've always been at war with Russia. This is a good thing. We've always been fighting Russia. It's never been any different. And I think you're right. This is intentional to convince people that we've got to up this war with Russia to the point where we're going to be getting into a nuclear confrontation because of these imbeciles who are making military planning and who don't seem to realize that the Russia of today possesses the same number of nuclear warheads as the Russia of 20 years ago, of 30 years ago. And it was a bad idea to start a nuclear war then. It's just as bad an idea as to start a nuclear war today, because it's going to mean a cataclysm that will engulf the whole world.
Yeah, from your mouth to God's ears. We hope that cooler heads prevail, but it doesn't seem likely, at least in Washington and Canada and what's going on in the Canadian Parliament. David, great to see you. Thank you so much for this. And Canada continues to stun us all, unfortunately. Thanks, David.
Thank you, Clayton.
Yeah, so unbelievable.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is amazing that Trudeau comes out, you know, just a short time ago and says, yeah, hey, you know, whatever. That's Russian propaganda that has nothing to do with it. And we had nothing to do with it.
The Russians who chose him and stood up and applauded.
I guess so.
It was the Russians who did that.
I really want to dissect that because, like, A, that means what? Like, Russia's deciding who speaks before Canadian Parliament, which I highly doubt. Or, like, did Russia, this guy was a plant and he's been pretending not to be a Nazi all this time in Canada as a Russian plant. And then finally, like the last moment, he's like, surprise, they did like a Scooby-Doo ending and they pull
the mask off.
This guy really is. Oh, he's a Nazi.
If it wasn't for those pesky kids, he would have gotten away with it.
Right. Or it's so confusing.
Well, and also it should be clear, like the news reporting about it, we played you the clip of the woman reporter who's like, there were many, many standing ovations for Zelensky, and even one for this 98-year-old Ukrainian man who fought bravely against the Russians in World War II. It's like, do you not know your history at all?
Right.
Are you that dopic? You really don't understand And think
that we were on the same side. So it replaced Russians with Americans, like fought against Americans. That means you were by process of elimination.
She could have just said that. She could have said, yes, this man fought bravely against the Americans in World War II. Like, just substitute. Really
would have been
matter.
The same.
Yeah, and in their context, Canada was on our side, too. So she could have said, this guy bravely fought against Canada in World War II. Let's
right.
honor him.
That would have been similar. And now there are Trudeau liberals coming out and saying, you know, we must not politicize this, which is... so rich because liberals love to politicize anything that they can call related to Nazism or extremism, like the trucker convoy. So please, other side, don't do what we love to do.
It was kind of amazing to call this out and to really dive deeply into his history and to confirm not only was he in the Waffen SS, but he was in a really terrible group. He was like the worst of the worst. So this wasn't like he was like a clerk at a library who worked for the Nazis. Like he worked in the Nazi library and just like checked out books and like, oh, he was just the librarian. No. This is as bad as it gets.
Well, there was a case in America where there was somebody who was like a bookkeeper in a Nazi regime who was brought to prosecution in Germany not too long ago. In America, we still have decided to either extradite or prosecute people who were Nazis. So there is no discussion there of like, how's this guy got away with his...
Well,
do
also,
we want... Is it too late? Do we want to... No, I have a hard time thinking about like bringing really elderly people to justice. You know, there's something... there's something that's hard for us to think like, oh my God, he's so old. Will he even know where he is? Do we really prosecute him? But that is what the law is currently doing in most Western countries.
I'm totally fine. The guy who's responsible for killing thousands of people. I'm totally fine that he's been hiding and he's outed now at 98 years old. I hope they take him away. And, you know, I wouldn't mind him having the same fate that all of those people that he ended up killing.
We had this discussion over lunch.
I have no problem with it whatsoever.
There's a patheticness to it.
Yeah. And it would be even more pathetic to see him, you know, come to justice. Absolutely, in my opinion. I don't really care how old he is about it. If he spent his whole life atoning for it somehow, I mean, but that's not the case at all. Why is the ADL quiet on this, by the way? The Anti-Defamation League. You think that they would be out slamming the Trudeau government. But that's odd that the ADL is so quiet on this.
That's weird, right?
It's really, something smells really odd about the Anti-Defamation League not commenting about this and the support of Nazis in the Parliament of Canada. Anyway, let us know your thoughts on this in the comments below. Please smash that like button and subscribe to the channel. We're live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Good to see all of you on Rumble tonight. Hey, by the way, we just passed 409,000 followers over on Rumble. Good to see a free speech platform. Rumble is supporting what we do here. So thank you for standing with us while YouTube continues to censor everybody. But hey, we're on YouTube as well. You know, we're here. So thank you guys for your support as well on that platform. We're going to get to more news. We're going to talk about the Pope. I mean, it's like it is like we went into some bizarro world like Scott Ritter talked about a few minutes ago. The Pope calling.
The Pope's message is now, thou shalt kill.
Yeah, send more weapons. Like, what world are we living in where the Pope is calling for a forever war in Ukraine? Okay, we'll get there in a second. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Moomoo. They have been a longtime supporter of our show, and therefore, we'd love for you to support them. I mean, they were with us almost since day one on this show, and they continue to support us. And they reached out recently and said, hey, we would love to be with you guys for the long term. And we love what you guys do. We love what you guys talk about, and we want to be here. So they are our exclusive partner in our favorite trading platform. If you want to learn how to trade, if you want to trade stocks and do it quickly and easily and with a really slick interface on Android and iPhone, on your Mac or your PC, you can go to redacted.inc, that's our website, /Moomoo, M-O-O-M-O-O. Now, they're a huge company. They're a $1 billion company with millions of users around the world. You can trade stocks. They give you all sorts of extra bells and whistles that they would normally charge for on other platforms. And Moomoo gives it to you for free, like free level two quotes and all sorts of alert sets that you can put in there that you don't have to pay for. Plus, right now, you can get up to 16 free stocks. That's right, 16 free stocks. And they're giving away a free Google stock or a Tesla stock when you open your account and you make your initial deposits. So the only way to get those stocks is to go to our link right there on the screen. It's also in our description if you miss it. It's redacted.inc/Moomoo. Redacted.inc/Moomoo. And you'll get access to those free stocks when you make your initial deposits. And like I said, even if you never do anything else with these stocks and you never trade stocks, well, then you got those free stocks. They can sit there and they can grow and you can sell them for cash and keep them in your account or transfer them back over to your own bank account. You can do whatever you want with it, but if you do want to buy some stocks, then you have access in that app. Anyway, redacted.inc/Moomoo is the place to go.
All right. Well, thou shalt not kill is still a Ten Commandment. The last time I checked for Christianity.
I think it's still there. Is it still there?
It still should be there. Now, we do know that, you know, historical documents that say true things have been revised in this digital age. But as far as I know, Christian tenets are still that thou shalt not kill. The Pope then had some really confusing politics over the weekend because he seems to be okay with killing if it means killing Russians. Over the weekend, he said this on a visit to France. What he's talking about is that Poland has decided it will no longer give weapons to Ukraine after Ukraine decided to sue them. And so the Pope says, well, now I see some countries are pulling back and aren't giving weapons. This will start a process where the martyrdom is the Ukrainian people, certainly, and this is bad. So we're doing double negatives here. He thinks it's bad to not give weapons, meaning it's good to give weapons. The Christian Pope said this. Okay. Now, he says, we cannot play with the martyrdom of the Ukrainian people. Again, I think in the segment before, we talked about how this war began because of ordered attacks on Russian-speaking Ukrainians, right? So, okay. He says, we have to help resolve things in a way that are possible, not to make illusions that tomorrow the two leaders will go out together to eat, but do whatever is possible. So what is he saying here? That Ukraine must be provided with more weapons? Does he know that they use them to fire on civilians? Does he know that Ukraine's been attacking civilian areas since 2014? I'm confused. Maybe he just doesn't know that. We know that, again, Zelensky ordered attacks on Crimea and the Donbass in 2021 and 2022. And as a result, the people living there asked Russia to intervene and protect them and voted to do so. So maybe the Pope doesn't know this. Jacques Bode, former NATO specialist, calls this war in Ukraine a negotiation that turned into a crisis. But look at that last line that the Pope said. We can't make illusions that tomorrow the two leaders will go out together to eat. So basically, he's saying we cannot hope for peace talks. That's foolhardy. We got to go with the weapons, basically. This, again, is just not what you would expect from a Christian leader.
Now, people in the chat are pointing out that they're saying, you know, he's Catholic. And a lot of people, a lot of, I guess, Christians in the chat are saying, well, Catholicism is not Christianity.
Catholicism is a sect of Christianity, right, though. A sect is when you take a doctrine and use similar interpretations of the same thing. So a cult is when a brand new person comes up with a brand new thing. But because Christians accept Jesus Christ as their leader, that is a sect of Christianity, Catholicism.
So like a cult is Scientology, where you just like in...
Sure.
You just create something.
Yeah, so
and
if,
you know,
if I were to say the cult, you know, my religious doctrine is only to eat peanut butter.
Yeah.
Then, and I think that that's the way that you save yourself in this world. That is a brand new doctrine. And I write a whole new book about it. But given that there is the Bible and the same leader, this is a spinoff of a similar doctrine. It is a sect of Christianity. That is technically what we're calling that. So I would say that Catholics, and you should speak for yourself if you're a Catholic, but I think that, you know, the idea of behaving in a Christian way is a shared belief among all sects of Christianity. So if you want to talk about this later, we can. But I think that Catholics would agree killing is bad. Can we at least agree on that if we're going to go through the technicalities.
Right. If we can have differences of opinion about sex versus this and all of this. But yeah, I think we can all agree that killing is bad.
Yeah.
And that war is bad. And the Catholic leader probably should be calling for peace.
Like for that. Peace talks. Right. Yeah. And he's saying here, peace talks are basically foolhardy. They're not going to have a meal together. So let's go with the weapons. I think it just sounds like he's been Joe Biden. Like, he's not even there. That seems like such a strange thing. Now, the Pope further says that the interests in this war are related to the sale of weapons. True, right? A Vatican spokesperson, though, clarified that the Pope emphasized that those who sell arms never pay the consequences for their choice, but leaves the reckoning to the suffering of the people. But he spoke in favor of weapons. So that's confusing. What am I missing here? Now, he made a bigger splash when he spoke about the migrant crisis, though. And this is where people are kind of losing their minds about this. He's saying that European leaders are politicizing this migrant crisis, and it's really not that bad. We're going to play about 2 minutes of him. He speaks quite slowly, so just prepare to be patient. Watch.
Let's talk about the harbor. The port of Marseille for a long time has been an open door towards the ocean. Many left Marseille to find a better future abroad, and many people found their way into the continent carrying hope in their luggage. Marseille is a great port, but it's also a great door that must not be closed. Many Mediterranean ports have closed. There are two words that bring fear, emergency and invasion. But the people taking to the sea are not invading. They're seeking hospitality. Migrants are not a passing emergency. As useful as that might be to make people scared and to spur them into action, this is a process that involves three continents around the Mediterranean, a process that needs to be managed in a forward-thinking way, that must be managed in a responsible way and must be managed in a way that looks at the reality of the situation. The favorite ports for arrival are in Malta, Cyprus,
okay,
Italy,
we can, Spain. We can stop this here. So, you know, that's nice. He's saying that they're just scaring us with the idea of emergency. Well, the numbers don't bear out because most European ports are accepting double and triple the numbers that they're used to in a normal year. And of course, if you want to be Christian or any religion or a good Catholic, you want to ascribe to this idea of taking care of all men, peace and security of all family, you know, no hunger for anybody. I'm with you, except governments cannot replicate the miracle of Jesus and feed 5,000 people with two fish and five loaves. But I have not seen that done in modern day. Here are the crowds that we've seen throughout Europe. Think about, you know, the Pope feeding this crowd with five loaves and two fish. I don't know. I'm not doubting that it happened at one time. I'm saying I don't see it happening today. Local governors are asking for help, not because they don't want these people, but because they cannot care for them all at once. That's sort of how that works. That's why we have immigration systems now in place. Here is what the internet is suggesting about this. Vatican City has 120 acres and only has a few hundred residents.
Oh, here we go.
I think there's like, I don't know, hundreds of rooms, dozens of rooms, right?
Yeah.
If the Pope really wants to show hospitality, he can too.
Alfie on our Rumble chat says, yeah, they should go to the Vatican. So Alfie agrees with this assessment.
Yeah.
This was tried and before, also, though. Go ahead, Phil, David.
I was going to say, it's also the richest city in the world, so they can afford it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think it's the richest country
in the world. It's a country.
Yeah.
Country,
and
yeah.
They do not accept immigrants. You cannot migrate into that country.
Well, we did learn this, of course, in World War II, when the Vatican, of course, you know, was housing right before deportation to the death camps. Of course, Pope Pius XII, the quote-unquote Hitler's Pope, right? So this has been tried before. Like, we'll hold these Jews for a short amount of time, but we'll kind of look the other way. We know they're being sent off to the death camp. So, well, we're not going to let them stay here at the Vatican. So this has been tried before.
Oh.
People seeking refuge from war or whatever, but we're not going to actually help them out. So we'll look the other way. And when everyone called on Pope Pius to denounce what was about to happen to these Jews, look the other way.
Okay, so maybe that's not a great place. If you're a migrant, maybe you don't want to start in the Vatican.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So then we're not making any suggestions. This was the internet suggestion. Again,
or Westminster Abbey or any of like the large, you know, all of this push for maybe open up Westminster Abbey or Buckingham Palace.
Sure.
Or all of those places, right?
Yeah.
They really want it. Or the White House. They could put tents on the White House lawn.
Right. They're saying, you know, walls are a bad thing. Welcome everybody. But that's for you to do, not us.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of not wanting other people to live comfortably or being stingy or, you know, reaching out for political gain. It's a matter of whether or not we want to live in an ordered society. And right now, we have borders for that reason. If we don't want that, then maybe we're in favor of social collapse, which may in fact be what we're seeing. This is what Elon Musk says about that. He says, it feels like we're watching the Roman Empire collapse again, but with Wi-Fi and memes this time. Yeah, it does feel like we're tearing down all social contracts and we're going to have to build new ones, right? Or something, I don't know. But let us know what you think. Our youngest, by the way, she calls him Elon Musk when we're talking
Elon
about,
Musk.
Yeah, about, about memes. She's like, yeah. that's owned by Elon Musk.
People in the chat, someone in the chat says, Hitler was not Catholic. No, I never said Hitler was Catholic, but, Pope Pius XII was known as Hitler's Pope. I wasn't talking about Hitler's religion, but they would met regularly. And when he came to power in 1939, when he became Pope in 1939, met regularly. And of course, looked the other way, when Jews were hauled off to concentration camps. So, yeah, those documents were released, I think, a number of years ago now. There's a great book on it called, I think by a historian, I read it years ago, called by John Cornwall? I don't forget. Called Hitler's Pope. It's a great book if anyone wants to read it. It's a great deep dive by the historian. Anyway, go ahead, David. Philip or somebody I interrupted.
Yeah, I was just really quick going to say I've been watching Mad Max on repeat to get prepared. The second one. To get prepared for what's coming.
Mel Gibson one?
I got my vehicles are all decked out with
speakers.
And
I know this is not a specific story, but I mean, I think I shared it with Natalie the other day. There was a number of remote viewers who said that they believe something massive is about to happen before the end of the year.
Oh,
that
okay.
They're all on the same page that something massive is going to happen before the end of 2023. So that's good news for your Christmas planning.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell they're talking about, what it's going to be, but.
All right, you're not doing so well for our reputation of like being doom and gloom. We're gonna.
I'm not doom and gloom. I'm not a remote viewer. I'm telling you. You just did a whole segment on the Pope pushing for war. You don't tell me
that happened.
I'm telling you.
I'm not dragging us into.
I will
doom
find
and gloom.
The news article. There was a number of remote viewers over the past week that did this.
Our whole show is Canada applauds Nazis and the Pope loves war. The world is upside down. Right? These are real things.
And and it's my fault.
No, I'm not saying it's your
fault. Cats and dogs living together.
All right. The next segment we're going to do. An adorable elephant was just born at the San Diego Zoo. We're going to take you live to the San Diego Zoo where this adorable elephant's been sleeping with a kitten over the past few weeks, and it's the best. That's how they end newscasts, like local newscasts.
But first, let's
check in and get the weather from John, our wacky weather guy. And then we're going to show you that adorable elephant so you can go to sleep and watch Johnny Carson.
All right. No, we're not going to do that. Coming up, we're going to talk about the new World Health Organization pandemic treaty that is coming very rapidly to a country near you, possibly your country, where the World Health Organization will decide if you're in lockdown, if there's a pandemic, what vaccine you take. They will decide, and they pushed that a little closer at the United Nations meeting last week. We didn't pay that much attention because we were watching Zelensky. We're going to pay attention now after this.
That's right. So I'm glad you're stepping up the non-doom and gloom part of the show. Thank you for providing that. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Lear Capital. Because right now, I mean, look, I was just telling before the show, I was talking to Philip and David before in our pre-show about the record number of bankruptcies that we're starting to see. The new data has been out over the past 24 hours. So, yes, personal bankruptcies, business bankruptcies. Like, what the heck is going on? Jerome Powell wants a soft landing in the economy? Yeah, wishful thinking. And we're seeing a record number of sell-offs of U.S. treasuries now by China, by Saudi Arabia, and Japan, and the U.K. So now selling off U.S. treasuries. How are we going to fund our government? We sell U.S. treasuries in order to borrow money from these countries in order to send it off to Ukraine. So we're devaluing the U.S. dollar right before your eyes, and that's why they're selling off these U.S. treasuries, because they know interest rates are going to go up higher, and it's just a whole absolute mess right now. So Bidenomics. Bidenomics is working for you. So we want to tell you how you should start really thinking about putting some of your savings into precious metals, okay? Even if it's like you've got $1,000 in your savings account in U.S. dollars, personally, I think you'd be crazy to do that, to keep your money in U.S. dollars, and instead putting it into precious metals like gold and silver, because it's lasted for 5,000 years through governments failing, wars, famines, everything else. Every government currency in world history has collapsed, all of them. So why would the U.S. dollar be immune to that, I ask you? Anyway, I'm not saying to take up your entire life and stick it into gold or silver, but it is a great way to protect yourself against inflation and as a hedge against this craziness. And our friends over at Lear Capital have been a longtime partner of our show. You can both buy gold coins where they're actually held by you in your house, or they're held off-site. You can do that either way. You can actually open up a self-directed IRA. You can purchase inside of your self-directed account so it grows tax-free. And then upon retirement, you can take it out, and all of the growth and appreciation and everything you've had in that account is tax-free. And you can even buy real estate and whatever you want inside that self-directed account. Anyway, give our friends over at Lear Capital a call. They're fantastic. They'll get on the phone with you and just see, you know, how they can help you get set up with precious metals, owning at least a portion of it in your portfolio. And right now you can get up to $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase. So call their 800 number. They'd love to talk to folks on the phone and kind of help you navigate this investing world. Their 800 number is right there on your screen. It's 1-800-613-3557. Or go to the website learredacted.com. We have it in the description below as well if you miss it. It's learredacted.com. And give them a call today and get up to $15,000 in bonus metals with a qualified purchase. So our thanks to Lear for supporting what we do here and supporting our gold and silver purchases. Natalie and I just bought a whole bunch of silver about a few weeks ago now. So we've doubled down on silver. Silver prices are still so cheap. It's like, I think, a little over $20 for an ounce of silver right now. Gold is nearing 2,000, and predictions are that's going to hit like 2,500 by Bank of America. So anyway, we're big on silver and gold here. So there you go.
Did you know that when the Spanish forced the Jews out, they weren't allowed to own any silver and gold? And so some of them who were escaping Spanish persecution would eat them in order to, like, save them. And
save what?
Like, save gold their coins? Wealth in order to preserve their wealth. So there was, like, there was a sort of racist thing you would say is like, oh, you know, is that a Jew? You could hear the clinging and clanging, because literally they had to, that, like, that was the one thing they preserved because they were banned from owning it. So that just shows how long, like, hard currency has been valuable and how the world is not secure from, like, who can and can't have these things, right?
Did you see, I know it's a side, it's a tangent.
This is totally a tangent.
It's not even as much of a tangent as what, well, it is. It's still,
I know, that was awful.
It is awful, but it is true. It shows you, like, the longevity of, like, precious metals. And did you see Bob Menendez, Senator Bob Menendez from New Jersey?
Yeah.
So the guy, you know, I think he got indicted, right? And his wife, and he was bribed with gold bars.
Yeah.
Just goes to show you, and the reason they were doing that, I think, was for privacy reasons. Like, they didn't want to track it with, like, you know, using bank money or U.S. dollars. So they were, like, bribing the guy with gold. Isn't that crazy? Like, super in crazy. 2023, or I think it was 2022 or whenever it actually happened. But gold bars, Bob Menendez. That's unbelievable. All right.
Okay, well, last week, world leaders moved closer to a pandemic treaty that would hand sovereign power to the unelected World Health Organization. This is the treaty we've been discussing and warning about. It will give the WHO the power to supersede your country's own government and their laws about pandemic rules and more. It is a huge power grab. We've seen these screenshots and we're going to review them in a minute. This will allow the WHO to dictate what is a pandemic, who has to lock down, vaccines, masking. It will also let them track and monitor you, define infodemics if you're sharing things it thinks could be dangerous. Even they have said, we've shown you this, even true concepts that are being shared out online that they could think are dangerous, they would call that an infodemic and they'd have the power to censor and monitor you. We've shown you this, okay? You can rewind the tape, just search it on any platform that you're watching us, WHO, it's there. But I'm gonna show you a few more in a second. Now, first the update, because last week the UN General Assembly happened and world leaders voted to pass what they're calling a political declaration to pass this pandemic preparedness. So it's not actually that they passed the pandemic treaty, because then we'd all be in it now. They collectively passed a political declaration to pass it. Why did they need to do this? I'm going to explain it to you in a second, but watch.
I'm not getting audio.
I don't hear the sound either.
Sorry, that was me. Let me play that again.
Okay, it's short. We're going to play it again. Sorry.
I will then submit for the formal consideration of the Assembly. It is adopted.
Okay, so did that gavel scare you? It did scare me, because I've read the documents. Now, again, this doesn't mean the treaty has passed. It means that the countries have committed to passing it in sort of a loose kind of way. Now, the reason they did this is because countries have been showing hesitation to hand over their sovereignty. Debates have been raging in U.S. Congress, in Parliament, in the U.K., in other places. And so they sort of shoved this in like, we're going to get there. We're gonna do this. Watch the head of the WHO, he calls himself Dr. Tedros, talking about this declaration.
First, I would like to start by thanking the president and all member states for endorsing the political declaration. This is a very historic day, and thank you so much indeed.
Thank you, Mr. President.
We may be tempted to think that the COVID-19 pandemic is history. But history teaches us that COVID-19 will not be the last pandemic. The question we all face is whether we will be ready when the next one arrives. As leaders, we have a collective responsibility to make sure we are ready.
Mm-hmm. All right, collective, he says.
Does anyone believe that?
But this is not a collective measure. It's an autocratic measure.
Right.
It gives him and his organization of diplomats who don't even pay taxes in any given place, they give him powers that he already has a lot of powers, right? So recently an American doctor, Dr. Meryl Nass, warned about this in a EU parliamentary meeting. She's been labeled as an extremist for saying this, but we have shown you these documents, you guys, and we regularly link them to you in our newsletter so that you can read them yourself. This is not a conspiracy interpretation. Watch how she warns about this, and then I'm going to bring you more about her in a second.
We're undergoing a soft coup. And the idea is to create a whole new set of laws and ignore the existing human rights laws and other laws under the pretext of pandemic preparedness and the biosecurity agenda. The WHO is developing through all its nations, but with the WHO directorate in the United States in charge, a pandemic treaty and amendments to the existing international health regulations that will remove the human rights protections currently embedded in the IHRs, will enforce surveillance, censorship, get rid of freedom of speech, require governments to censor and only push a single narrative. Also, we will be subject, if they can make this work, to vaccines developed in 100 days, which the organization CEPI is planning to do. And one of the people who founded CEPI was Jeremy Farrar, who is now the chief scientist at the WHO, to bring this forward. Other things that the amendments do is to bind the states so they're no longer recommendations but enforceable edicts, provide a liability shield, get rid of intellectual property rights, move supplies from one country to another, enforce digital passports, and the Director General of WHO can demand that a pandemic or a potential pandemic exists. He can just declare it with no standards, and then countries around the world will have to obey. Also, the WHO will tell you what drugs you can and can't use in your nation once a pandemic is declared. Obviously, the budget will increase. One Health is another part of this. One Health is a concept that was created to enable the WHO, with these documents, to take over jurisdiction of everything in the world by saying that climate change, animals, plants, water systems, ecosystems are all central to health. Also embedded in this concept is a peculiar notion that humans are no longer of greater value than animals.
Okay. She's not wrong. We have shown you every single screenshot of what she says. She's not making this up. Now, she mentioned Jeremy Farrar. You may remember that he is one of the scientists who worked with Dr. Fauci before he got this WHO job to doctor the Nature paper that said that COVID did not come from a lab. He's one of those dudes. He's what they call the Maryland boys, okay? So what's interesting about this is that no one's here saying, did the WHO do a good job with rules and recommendations around the pandemic? I don't think anyone could argue that they did. So, they should be rewarded, right? This Maryland boy, these Fauci boys, should they be rewarded with more power having done this to this paper? Well, no one seems to be bothered otherwise. A little bit of context about Dr. Nass. She was suspended in Maine by the Medical Licensing Board because she was critical of the vaccine and had recommended during the pandemic alternative treatments to COVID, such as the I'm not going to say it because there still are rules around what we cannot say. She has sued the medical board, though. She wants them to apologize and retract their position, and she wants punitive damages, meaning she wants them to pay her as punishment to compensate what she lost and for violating her rights as a medical professional and as an American. Now, incidentally, the drug that she suggested for COVID, I'm going to decide not to show this screenshot. Should I show it or?
Probably not.
Okay, we're not going to show it. Well, I want to tell you this, that the Mayo Clinic now recommends that treatment, the hydro something something that I'm not going to take a chance of saying.
Yeah, because when we say it on YouTube, it's a violation of their terms of service. So maybe now YouTube will update their terms of service.
Given that Mayo Clinic says that this is actually a legitimate and valid way to treat the virus.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Philip. You want to ring in on that?
Oh, I was just going to say what they tag us on is they say it's promoting dangerous information. That's basically like we're promoting harm.
Okay.
Right.
So what I'm telling you is Mayo Clinic now says that that is a valid way to treat COVID. But anyone who has said that before has been dinged or demonetized. This woman was delicensed. So not allowed to practice medicine. Now, the WHO, though, still does not recommend this hydro drug that we're talking about. So under this pandemic treaty, the Mayo Clinic can say, we've seen science that shows that this is an effective treatment to COVID. And the WHO can say, nope, we're not buying it. You do what we say instead. No diversity of thought here. And so you don't get to choose what doctor you think is really has, you know, your best interest. You will do what they say. Now, the media wants you to think that this WHO will take power, global power, is a crazy conspiracy theory. Here is the Associated Press saying that this is not really binding. It doesn't sign over U.S. sovereignty. You can all calm down. That's not actually the case. This is conspiracy theory. Again, we've shown you this. We've shown you the drafts.
The AP News Verification Seal of Approval. The Associated Press, the mouthpiece of the deep state.
Says that it's fine.
Right.
Even just today, I was listening to an NPR piece about this passing of the political treaty that the UN passed last week. And NPR said, the reporter says, they had to do this because discussions for the pandemic treaty were not going so well. And then they played a clip from a doctor who was like, it was going to be great. I mean, we could be prepared for pandemics. We could force people to take vaccines. We could force lockdowns. We could force masking. It's going to be great. That's why, but it's too bad it's going so poorly that people are not for it. So you can see the media is for it, the pandemic preparedness treaty. But lest they call us conspiracy theorists, I'm just going to show you these few edits. I'm not going to repeat myself to all the things we've seen together. But this is the edits to the WHO International Health Regulation that they did this year. They made these changes in order to prepare for this pandemic treaty that they want. We went over this in May of this year. You can already see how it's going based on this edit saying that the WHO standing recommendation used to mean non-binding advice. Oh no, strike that. The temporary recommendation means advice. It's not non-binding anymore, you guys. Why would they take those out? You can see where this is going. If your country signs this, it is binding. Now, does this only kick in when we're in a pandemic? No, it kicks in whenever they feel like we're in a pandemic. Take a look at this scope. It says it will help them prevent, prepare, control, provide international spread of disease advice, including through health system readiness and resilience in ways that are commensurate with and restricted to all risks with a potential to impact public health. All risks, not just health related, but like information we've told you about, and which avoid unnecessary interference with international traffic and trade, livelihoods, human rights, equitable access to health products and healthcare technologies, and know-how. So this is like not just your healthcare, but also trade. Like they could say, we think that, you know, like the Dutch farmers, we think that these cows being next to these rivers may present a pandemic, so we're going to have to take away the cows and the food and the industry and all of that stuff. They have laid it out in their own documents. So even though many governments are taking a beat and considering not signing this, the United Nations moved the ball down the field last week at the UN General Assembly with this political treaty. So you better tell your politicians if you don't like this while you still can.
Yeah.
That's all I got for you on that.
Please do. And this is an opportunity, guys. I mean, this stuff is slipping away from us and it's happening right before our eyes. And
it may be, or the fact that the media is presenting this as if the pandemic treaty is slipping away from them may be that there is movement, that global governments are being told by their constituents they don't want this, and maybe it is withering on the vine. So keep talking.
Yeah, keep talking. Keep pressing your local representatives about it, no matter where you live. This is not just a United States issue at all. This is a global issue.
I mean, we've shown you their proposal for monitoring you, for vaccine passports, for monitoring infodemics. The infodemic screen even said that an infodemic could be caused by even true information. So there's an attack on truth here, you guys. So you got to speak up. You got to share this and speak up, or else this will be the law that we all have to live in.
It's really troubling times. And people are curious why you pronounce the Mayo Clinic as Mayo. And I think it's you call it Mayo Clinic because you don't like mayonnaise.
Oh.
Is that why? Because you don't want to say mayo? Because mayo, mayonnaise kind of freaks you out?
I said it like the month in Spanish.
There's a few key words. If you pay attention to Natalie long enough, or if you're married to her like I am, she says, you know, like Nikola Tesla, she pronounces that incorrectly. She calls it a Tesla with a Z. Tesla. Mm-hmm. Mayo, you call Mayo.
Sorry. Yeah. I don't know.
What else do you?
I like that one of your categories was like, or if you're married to her, like as if there's other people out there with that qualifier. Like,
that's right. Yeah.
Who else would know that? Or if you're one of my children.
Yeah, I think, do our kids know about you calling it a Tesla? Yeah, because our kids will correct you when you say Tesla.
Yes, this is a joke
Tesla.
In our house.
Like, Mommy, it's Tesla. It's Tesla. All right. Hey, we should mention that we do have a daily newsletter. We would love for all of you to subscribe to it. It's totally free, and it publishes first thing in the morning or over your cup of coffee. The kids call it the best newsletter in the world. I think it's the most informative newsletter in the world, and you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes. So all you need to do is go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, and then you'll receive a welcome email from me. It'll come from my email, clayton@redacted.inc. You can hit me back and say hello. I love to read your emails. But then drag it over into your VIP folder or your inbox, because Gmail labels us as dangerous. They label our newsletter as dangerous. And so it might wind up in your spam folder. And we've gotten alerts. Viewers have sent us what Gmail sends them after they've signed up, and it warns you of it being dangerous, which I absolutely love. I wonder if Yahoo does that and AOL. Anyway, if you guys sign up, let me know if you get any crazy alerts like that. Anyway, go to redacted.inc. It's not .com. And the newsletter's short. You can see how it looks. We do a little things in case you missed it overnight while you were sleeping. We give you a few market updates. We tell you what's happening with gold and silver and Bitcoin and the Dow and, you know, and the main markets and all of that. And then we cover about 4 or 5 big stories. And we try to make you smile a little bit if we can in the morning. And just try to bring a lot of value to your morning. So Monday through Thursday is when we publish that newsletter. Redacted.inc is the place to go and sign up. So thanks to all of you guys for being a part of our show. Thank you guys so much for subscribing, for smashing that like button, and for being here at 4 p.m. Eastern time. We'll be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.